From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Women in Idaho are facing unique challenges as they grapple with issues of gender equality, women's rights, as well as equal protection under the law. This is why the Alturas Institute brings together exceptional women every year to talk about these issues and find ways to solve them. This year's Conversations with Exceptional Women will include a Pulitzer Prize winner, a Grammy Award winner, and other successful women. This year's theme is Courage is Contagious, Standing Up for Women. And here to talk about next week's conference are Dr. David Adler, the president of the Alturas Institute, Amy Anderson, a Grammy-winning conductor and producer, Dr. Carolyn Heldman, the executive director of the Representation Project and chair of the Critical Theory and Social Justice Department at Occidental College in Los Angeles, and Karen Krause, former New York Times sports writer and author. I want to welcome all of you to the program.
Great to be here, Hannah. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
And Dr. Adler, let me begin the conversation with you. How did the idea of Conversations with Exceptional Women get started? And Dr. Adler, can you? Oh, you're muted, Dr. Adler, if you can unmute yourself.
Good. Sorry. Hello, Gemma. Nice to be with you again. And my valued colleagues at the Alturas Institute, all award-winning participants in the civic life of our world. The idea for this conference started about 10 years ago, and it reflected the concern that women needed to be more greatly represented, not only here in Idaho, but of course across the nation and the world. And we thought that if we can host a first-rate blue ribbon conference in Idaho promoting women's rights and gender equality, then we would be really accomplishing something important. Because after all, the promotion of women's rights is the promotion of human rights and the equal protection of the law, all key mission goals of the Alturas Institute. And so I'm just delighted that we could have such talented women, outstanding female leaders from across the country join us each year to participate in our conference.
So Dr. Adler, talk to us a little bit about this year's theme, Courage is Courageous, Standing Up for Women.
Mm-hmm. Well, this theme, I think, reflects a fact of life that courage is contagious, that if people observe others exhibiting courage in the face of oppression or denial of rights, such as gender equality and women's rights in the workplace, that they will be heartened. They'll be emboldened to join the exercise of speaking out and standing up for women as well. And the idea that courage is contagious is an idea borrowed from my old friend Barbara Morgan, an astronaut and a Boise favorite and a former board member of the Alturas Institute, who said one year during our event in response to a question from a woman in the audience about any fear that she and other astronauts might have had as they waited on the launch pad. And she said, well, yeah, there might be some fear, and that could be contagious. But Barbara said wisely, courage is contagious, too. And that was the starting point, really, Gemma, for this idea. And you should know that everyone here on this broadcast today and the other women participating in us have been women who have exhibited courage and written about courageous acts as a way of promoting women's rights and gender equality. And I stand in awe of them. Karen Krause, for example, during her days as an award-winning New York Times golf writer, played the key role in persuading officials at Augusta National Golf Club to open their doors to women members. Huge. Did the same thing at the RNA in England. And of course, Amy Anderson's incredible film, Women Warriors, The Voice of Change, reflects centuries of women standing up for themselves to defend their rights and to promote the very concept of gender equality. And her film, by the way, has garnered more than 30 awards across the globe. And Caroline Heldman is an internationally recognized champion of women's rights, a strong combative opponent of sexual assault and domestic violence, an award-winning scholar, and all around strong proponent and champion of women's rights. So that's just three of our conference favorites. We have, as you know, Fiona Hill, and we have Ms. Leona Tate, who as a young girl was one of the New Orleans Four, the young girls who desegregated New Orleans public schools after the Brown decision. And she was the subject recently of a CBS News program. And so we just have, Gemma, I'm proud to say, a wonderful galaxy of stars who have brought their talents and skills and energy to promoting women's rights. And that's not even to mention, as you know, that we have four state leaders here, Mayor McLean, Senator Wintrow, Representatives Rubel and Necochea, who will form a wonderful session Thursday at 3 o'clock when they join their voices to address the topic of women, politics, and rights in Idaho, a subject that you and I have discussed when I've been your guest previously.
If I could jump in here, yes. This is Karen Krauss, and The Courage is Courageous. It is, it really resonates with me. As David mentioned, my first visit to Idaho for this conference was 2013, and I was coming off a year in which I had taken on the Old Boys Club at Augusta and felt completely isolated and like an outcast. And when I came to this conference and was surrounded by all these amazing, accomplished women, it gave me my tribe, if you will. I realized I wasn't alone. I wasn't isolated. I spent most of my time around men who just didn't get what I was about or were openly hostile. Mm-hmm. So the courage is spread not just hopefully to the people in the audience, but also among the women on this who share the stage. I leave every one of these conferences just rejuvenated and inspired to, you know, continue fighting the good fight.
So, Dr. Heldman, let me bring you into the conversation. As it was mentioned, you wrote a book on gender equality. You've done a lot of work on gender and politics. In your opinion, what is the biggest problem facing women today when it comes to gender equality?
Great question. A big one. I think that there are a lot of challenges that remain in terms of social status, political inequality, and economic inequality. And you know, to really go to the root of the problem, we still live in a culture that values men and what they do more than women and what they do. And this shows up in a variety of different ways, whether it's the vast underrepresentation of women in political positions. For example, 51% of the population are women in the United States, but we really celebrated in the 25% in the House and the Senate. So we still have a massive gap there. We've never had a woman president. Only about 1 in 10 governors is a woman. And we just have representation gaps across the board in terms of leadership positions. And then, of course, we have the wage gap, which is exacerbated for women of color. We have inequality in the household, where even though women make up 48% of the paid workforce, the expectations that we will still take on the majority of the caretaking and domestic activities in the home lead women to have all sorts of health issues, mental health, physical health, simply because we're working much longer hours. And so I would say that really at the heart of it, we would have to address the fact that all of us who live in a, for a shortcut term, patriarchy, where we value men and what they do more than women and what they do, that we would actually have to recognize how deep that runs in order to actually address persistent gender gaps. Because at this point in time, it'll take us about 400 years to even achieve political parity.
Wow. And that's just shocking to actually think about that. With that said, I know, Amy, you wrote a documentary. It includes a lot of themes of social justice as well as gender equality. But one of the things it focuses on is education. And can you talk a little bit about how this is so critically important, especially what Dr. Heldman just said, you know, and it's making sure that girls get educated, which still is not happening around the world.
Yes, there are about 100 million girls around the world who are denied an education because of their gender. And if you think about the scientists and the doctors and the researchers and the leaders and the heads of states that could be born if girls were given equal access to an education, and it would change the world. And I have a quote that I put on the tag of my emails that says, women and girls, when given equal opportunities, become pillars of strength in their communities. They are the key to building prosperous nations and creating a peaceful and more equitable future for all of humanity. And that stems from an education, the ability to know how to write your name. So many girls are denied the opportunity to know how to spell their name. So the overarching theme of Women Warriors of Voices of Change, aside from highlighting 65 activists from the past and present, is to go deeper into the extraordinary implications of denying girls and women an education, and the extraordinary implications of what happens when women and girls are given access, equal access to an education.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Heldman, I want to go back to something that you said, which is, you know, left for lack of a better term, we live in a patriarchal society. And you know, I've always said, like, it's a construct, right? It doesn't mean that every man is you know, part of the patriarchy. It doesn't, you know, because there are some women who are you know, very firmly entrenched in the patriarchy. And I wonder if we can broaden that idea of, look, this is what our society and our culture was based upon, was a patriarchal society. So therefore, we need to actually just acknowledge that. And then we need to start moving in ways to make equity be a reality. Because I also think there's this difference between equity and equality, right? And it's like, we're never going to have equality if we don't have equity. And that means in the workforce and in the home. But yet, how in the world do we move the needle, especially when you just said it could take us 400 years to do that?
It's another great question, Yana. I'm right there with you that we need to name patriarchy for what it is. And you're absolutely right that it's not actually about individual men or men perpetrating the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. I in my work, find that women are primary perpetuators of patriarchy, if you will, because they're the primary caregivers and they're passing these values down to the next generation. So anytime you have a social system where something is so accepted, it means that everybody is upholding that system of inequality. And in fact, our work at the Representation Project is very much focused on certain brands of masculinity that are harmful to boys and men as a real point of liberation for boys and men who die at higher rates at every age because of the ways in which they are asked to perform masculinity. And you're right, this is all a social construct, meaning that it shifts rapidly over time. It differs by country. And so that, for me, speaks volumes in terms of hope. It means that we can create the sort of worlds we want to live in. And so I find it really important to open up what theorists call the political imaginary, which is to engage in futurism or think about the world that you want in the future and then reverse engineer that, which would mean that instead of starting with the blueprint of patriarchy and tweaking that, that it would mean that we would completely re-envision the world we want to live in and then work backward and change those systems. And you're right that, you know, equity, meaning that people get what they need, rather than equality, which is everyone gets the same thing, would land us in a place where I just imagine what the world would look like if we didn't squander all of this potential, if we truly educated folks and gave folks a space, like everyone had equal access to things, and beyond equal, if they needed more in order to engage it, like a poor kid is going to need more to go to college than a middle or upper class kid, even if you comp, you know, the amount that they're paying for their education, a poor kid's still going to need more support because they're not going to get that from their family. And I think that's an example, for example, of equity versus equality. Just imagine the possibility if everyone were able to achieve their full human potential, what our world would look like.
Let's take a quick break. Oh, go ahead, Karen. Sorry.
Yes, Karen Krause here. If I could just add that one of the speakers at the conference is Lisa Cornwell. She was a Golf Channel reporter who wrote a book about the inequities and discrimination and harassment that she faced while working at Golf Channel. And the problem is, this is a women's issue, but we need more men like Dr. Adler to support women, because what happened to Lisa is the people in at the Golf Channel and NBC, which owns it, and NBC Universal basically silenced everybody. Nobody talked about her book, and it's been basically buried by the patriarchy in charge.
I want to get back to what we were talking about earlier in the last segment, and this is the idea of, you know, equity, equality, the patriarchy, all of these, you know, terms that they get thrown around a lot. But Amy, I'm curious, in the work that you do, in particular, having, you know, done this documentary that looks at, you know, girls and women around the world, are these similar themes that you're seeing in other parts of the world? Or in some regards, even when it comes to education, that is so top of mind, where do these other issues fall, if that makes sense?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. I slightly lost the connection. Could you repeat that, please?
Sure. I'm just curious as to, when you were looking at the need and necessity for educating women and girls around the world, how do these other ideas of patriarchy, of equity, of equality play into that? Is that a dynamic that you see in other parts of the world as well?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, we've seen the absolute collapse of Afghanistan and the collapse of the human rights progress of women and girls there. Now, women and girls are largely banned from getting an education, from going to school, banned from leaving their houses, from leaving their homes. They have to have face coverings and cover their body. You know, they had made some progress before the Taliban took over again, but in Afghanistan, it's tremendously bad in the moment for women and girls. And India, for instance, there's still honor killings that go on. There's gang rapes of young women. There was a young woman, a 14-year-old, I think I read in the news today, that was gang raped, and then her body was burned. And often the perpetrators aren't prosecuted. It's very grim, actually, what's going on in terms of the repression and the actually persecution of women and girls just for their gender around the world.
Mm-hmm. So, Karen, let's delve a little bit into sports. You, having been a sports writer and covered sports all over the world, and how, you know, we really see such divides within sports, right? I mean, I think one of the biggest examples recently is the U.S. women's soccer team, where they had to, they literally had to go to court in order to get equity. And yet they have historically performed so much better than the men's U.S. soccer team. Is that just, frankly, one example of what it's like to be a woman, a female athlete, but at the same time, also a woman covering sports, because it's still to this day an incredibly male-dominated field?
Yes, more male-dominated than when I broke in the mid-80s, sadly. You can go to more recent examples than the U.S. women's national soccer team's fight for equality. The winning team this year from Spain, one of its officials kissed one of the players on the lips during the awards ceremony and thought that was perfectly all right. Spain won despite being without several of its top players, who boycotted the tournament because of harassment and terrible behavior by the national team coach. So these are just, a week in the life of a woman athlete. It's just women, in the workforce make what, 73 cents to every to the dollar for a man, and it's even worse in women's sports. I looked up golf recently, and the 100th ranked man last season made over $1 million, like I think it was 1.2, 1.5 million. Mm-hmm. The 100th ranked woman made $100,000. $100,000 when you're traveling the world to play golf is barely, you're going to be in debt by the end of the season. So women have come a long way in sports, but still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Heldman, you said something that I found interesting in the last segment, and that is when we were talking about patriarchy, you know, being this construct, and how you can argue that there are many women who not only are a part of this, but are the ones who are in some ways perpetrating it into the next generation, because they many times are the primary parent. And I want to dig into that a little bit more, because I joke that I have two boys, and I always joke, I'm like, my kids just know an angry mom, because I'm always talking about this stuff and I'm always up in arms about it. But I mean, but part of that is that I do believe that there is a responsibility, in particular as mothers to boys, that it is our job to educate them if we actually want to see change. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. But I think the challenge is that there's a desire for parents to protect their children, right? Obviously. Mm-hmm. And so you, for example, if your boy is stepping out, if you have a son and he's stepping outside of gender norms, which is pretty common because gender norms are social constructs. And when I was raising my nephew, mm-hmm. you know, he loved the nail polish. He loved the belt pants. He loved a lot of things that encourage ridicule from peers at school. And so I think we're caught in this difficult situation where we want to protect them. So we put them in these boxes of masculinity and femininity, which are not healthy for either. They're rigid. They're, as we keep saying, social constructs, meaning that we as a culture have decided those are the rules, right? Those are the constraints. And so we want to protect them. So giving them that freedom, or encouraging that freedom to be their full selves and have full expression, becomes scary. For boys and men, though, it really is a life or death situation, in the sense that I mentioned that men die at higher rates than women in every age, right? And this has to do with a mm-hmm. number of things that are directly linked to masculinity. One is that young men are encouraged and across a lifespan encouraged to engage in higher risk activities in order to perform their manhood, because it's so fragile, they have to constantly perform it. And what does it mean to be a traditionally masculine man? It means you're assertive, aggressive, you're in control of situations. And so that performance takes a toll. We also know that men are less likely to seek mental health and less likely to comply with physical, be in compliance when they go, they're less likely to go to the hospital or the doctor when they need physical help. And then they're less likely to be in compliance once a plan is laid out. We have higher rates of suicide amongst men. We have an internalization, higher rates of unaddressed mental health, which, leads to internalization and sometimes higher rates of substance abuse. And so when we look at masculinity, it is a construct. It can be changed. The hegemonic, or the most mm-hmm. dominant brand, is not something that helps boys and men. And if we truly care about them, we would absolutely be addressing those social norms.
Mm-hmm. So Karen and Amy, I asked Dr. Heldman this question earlier in our conversation, and I would like to ask both of you as well. And so Karen, I'll start with you. In your opinion, what do you believe is the biggest problem facing women today when we're talking in regards to gender equity and equality?
It's a great question. My belief is that, I'm going to paraphrase something that my former colleague at the New York Times, Charles Blow, wrote a few years ago, that it's not just enough for men to not be sexist. They have to realize all the ways in which they benefit from the patriarchy that they're not even aware of. And we've talked here in this segment so much about women, and I'm frustrated with the onus always being on the women to change this construct. We need mm-hmm. the men in our lives to step up. In sports, that's absolutely critical. It's not enough for women golfers and women tennis players to follow Billie Jean King's lead and demand equality. We need the men golfers and the men tennis players to openly support the women, even if that means that maybe they temporarily get a smaller piece of the pie of a, you know, very big pie. So I just think that we really need, at this point, women are driving themselves, you know, just they're becoming frazzled trying to change a patriarchal system. We need the men around us to step up and actively, proactively do their parts.
Well, right. I mean, Karen, I think women are exhausted.
Exhausted. And, you know, we may be 51% of the population, but as Caroline pointed out, you know, we hold very small percentage of the actual power. So I just get so frustrated when I'm, you know, asked what I can do as a woman. Like, I've spent my entire career trying to make a difference and butting heads with, you know, openly hostile men who are trying to really stiff arm me at every step of the way. So I just wish we had more men who were willing to not just talk the talk, but walk the walk. And this includes a lot of people I see on social media with the hashtag girl dads. You know, we need the girl dads to really be proactive for their grown up, you know, the world they want to create for their grown up daughters.
Mm. Good point. Amy, I just have about 2 minutes left. And so I would love to know your thoughts in regards to the biggest problem that you believe is facing women today in terms of gender equity and equality.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with what Karen said. Men and women need to work hand in hand to advance gender equality. I teach at USC in LA in the film scoring department, and I've worked for the last many years with female composers. And for instance, in only about 4% at the most of big budget films are scored by women. So there's so little, such a underrepresentation of people of color and women in that community, which I'm very well acquainted with. And for instance, in the conducting profession, there's a competition called La Maestra. It's in Paris. It's in its third year, and women have formed with women leadership have formed this conducting competition for young women, for women only to compete in, and they award prizes, and these women go on to get major jobs and major opportunities. So, I mean, but at the end of the day, there's still so much work to be done that I feel like Karen said, that men and women, we need to work hand in hand, sort of grassroots from the bottom up, to support each other, because we're all intertwined, and a rising tide lifts all boats. And I think as when women get real equality, it helps all of humanity. It helps every country. It helps every society. It helps communities and villages and towns and cities. And it ultimately helps men and boys and families.
Well, I want to thank all of you so much for your time today. Remember, the Conversations with Exceptional Women will be at the Yonke Center in Boise, September 20th through the 22nd. It is part of the Alturas Institute. We will, of course, put links to the conference on our webpage, boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, we're taking center stage. Introducing NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of Black-led stories from NPR's podcasts. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.